What would be the motive?
Can you explain this any other way?
Marcy said, gesturing toward the room with the dead priest.
Apathian? Murdering? Sir, their priests are some of the least aggressive people on the planet. I've seen toddlers more dangerous.
Aradel continued, rubbing his chin.
Ready, he said. Go get those conventicalists something to drink. They could use a warm mug right now, I'd suspect.
Sir,
Reddy said, taken aback.
You've been spending so much time at the gun range, you've gone deaf,
Aradel said.
Be about it, Captain. I need to speak to Constable Colmes.
Reddy's glare at Marcy could have boiled water, but he moved off to do as ordered.
Sir,
Marcy said, watching him go,
I can't help noticing that you're determined to see the rest of the constables hate me.
Nonsense, he said. Just giving the boy a nudge. He's useless when he isn't trying to show off for me. Those weeks when he thought he had the assistant's position sewn up were miserable. He's a better officer when he has somebody to compete with.
He took Marcy by the shoulder and steered her away from the seated conventicalists. A junior corporal had just shown up with blankets and mugs of warm tea. Hopefully, Reddy wouldn't be too put out at having that job stolen from him, too.
I, Aradel said, drawing her attention back to him, can't fight mist wraiths and spirits in the night. I'm a watchman, not an exorcist.
I understand that, sir,
Marcy said. On their ride over here, she'd told him what Waxillium had said about Bleeder. She wasn't about to keep information like that from her superior.
But if the criminal is supernatural, what option do we have?
I don't know, Aradel said. And that frustrates me to no end. I've got a city dry as a pile of autumn leaves, Lieutenant, and it's about to go up in flames. I don't have the manpower to hunt down a fallen immortal. I need to have constables on the streets trying to keep this city from consuming itself.
Sir, what if the two are related?
The two murders?
The murders and the unrest, sir.
She closed her eyes, remembering the chapel with its dome and pews, and tried to imagine it as it had been earlier. Larkspur, standing in front and waving his hands, horrified parishioners fleeing and bearing the story that the Pathian leader had murdered a survivorist priest.
Bleeder, or whoever is behind this, has distracted the government with a scandal,
Marcy said, opening her eyes.
Now she strikes at one church leader in the guise of another? Sir, whatever her real motives are, she's obviously trying to strain Ellendel. She wants this city to break.
You might be ascribing too much to one person, Lieutenant.
Not just a person, Marcy said. A demigod. Sir, what started the worker strikes?
Hell if I know,
Aradel said, patting at his pocket and taking out his cigar case. He opened it and found only a little folded note. He grimaced and showed it to her. There's a banana in your drawer.
Damn woman will be the death of me. Anyway, I suspect the strikes have been building for a while. Harmony knows I sympathize with the poor fools. Get paid like dirt while the house lords live in mansions and penthouses.
But why now?
Marcy asked.
It's the food, right? Suddenly spiked prices? Worry that even when the strikes end, there won't be food to be bought?
That certainly hasn't helped,
Aradel agreed.
Those floods are going to be a strain.
A broken dam. Did we investigate that properly?
Aradel paused, little paper half-folded to return to his pocket.
You think there could have been sabotage?
Could be worth checking, Marcy said.
Could be indeed, Aradel said. I'll see if I can spare some men. But if you're right, what's this creature's endgame?
General Mayhem?
Marcy asked. Aradel shook his head.
Maybe it's different for mist wraiths. But men who do things like this, they do it to prove something. They want to show how clever they are, or they want to stop an injustice. Maybe she wants to bring someone down. Isn't the governor a Pathian?
I think so.
So this murder tonight could be an attempt to discredit his religion.
Aradel nodded.
Kill his brother, expose a scandal, undermine his faith, cause riots during his tenure. Rusts. This could be about making sure that Innate doesn't just die. He gets stomped to the ground.
Marcy nodded slowly. Sir, I might have proof that the governor is corrupt.
What? What kind of proof?
Nothing definitive, she said, blushing. It has to do with his policies, and when he's changed his mind on bills, when he's voted irregularly following visits with certain key individuals. Sir, you said you hired me in part because of my ability to read statistics. I'll show you what I have once it's all arranged. But the story the governor's record tells is of a man who is offering himself up for sale.
Ardell ran a hand through his hair, red flecked with gray.
Harmony. Keep this quiet, Lieutenant. We'll worry about it another time. Understand?
Yes, sir. And I agree.
But good work,
he noted, then jogged over to take the crime scene reports. Marcy couldn't help feeling a thrill that he'd listened to what she said, even when all she could offer was half explanations. At the same time, however, a disturbing thought struck her. What if Aradel was secretly the Chandra somehow? How much damage could Bleeder do if she had an entire Octon's constables under her thumb? No. Ardell had been around people when the priest was murdered. Rusts. The creature would have Marcy jumping at shadows, wondering if everyone she met was a Chandra. She went to get herself a cup of that tea, hoping it would help her banish the image in her head of poor Father Bin hung from the wall. She wasn't halfway to the table with the flasks before the doors to the foyer slammed open and Waxillium strode in. He trailed tassels like the curling mists, his powerful stride prompting lesser constables to scuttle out of his way. How was it that he could so fully encapsulate everything the constables should be, but weren't? Noble without being pandering, thoughtful yet proactive, unyielding yet inquisitive. Marcy smiled, then hurried after him. It wasn't until they reached the chapel, with its large glass dome and the dead priest hanging on the far side, that she realized she'd forgotten entirely about getting tea. A headache still thumped inside her skull. Aradel stood inside the nave, accompanied by two young constables.
Lord Ladrian, he said, turning toward Waxillium, we'll have a report on the body ready for you in... I'll see for myself, constable, Waxillium said. Thank you.
He dropped a bullet casing and rose into the air, soaring over the rows of pews beneath the dome to land on the dais. Aradel sighed and muttered a curse under his breath, then turned to one of the corporals.
See that his lordship gets whatever he needs. Maybe he can make something of this damn mess, assuming he doesn't just shoot the place up instead.
The young constable nodded, then ran to join Waxillium, who was saying something to Wayne, who had stepped up to join him. Whatever Waxillium said sent the shorter man scuttling out the doors on some errand. The constable general shook his head, a sour grimace on his lips.
Sir, Marcy said, you're upset with Lord Waxillium?
Aradel started, as if he hadn't seen, or hadn't registered, her standing there.
Pay no heed, Lieutenant. His lordship is a great resource to this department.
Sir, that has the sound of a practiced answer to it.
Good, Aradel said, because it took me a long time to learn to say it without cursing.
Could I have the non-practiced version?
Aradel looked her over.
Let's just say that it must be damn nice, Lieutenant, to have other people to clean up your messes for you.
He nodded to her, then stalked from the room.
Rusts, was that how Aradel saw Waxillium? A rogue nobleman accustomed to getting what he wanted? Blunt in ways that Aradel could never be?
The Constable General wasn't a nobleman, and had to worry about funding, politics, the future of his men. Waxillium could just butt in and do what he liked, shooting and letting his status, both as an allomancer and a house lord, get him out of it. That perspective was eye-opening. Waxillium was a trouble. A worthwhile trouble, as he did get things done, but almost as bad as the problems he solved. But for that brief moment, he seemed less an ally and more a storm that you had to prepare for and clean up after. Disturbed, she walked up through the room to join him beside the body.
The spikes give off strong lines, Waxillium noted to her, pointing at Father Bin's ruined face. To my allomantic senses, I mean. From what I've read, I think that means they're not hemorrhagic spikes. Those are supposed to be tough to see and push on like metal mines.
What would spiking him accomplish?
Maracy asked.
No idea, Waxillium said. Still, when you get that body down, send me a sample of metal from each spike. I want to run some tests on their composition.
All right,
Maracy said.
We should have seen it. She's trying to drive a wedge between the Pathians and the Survivorists.
The governor is Pathian,
Maracy said.
We think Bleeder is trying to get at him.
You're right, Waxillium said, narrowing his eyes. But that's not her true goal. She wants to overthrow the city. Perhaps the governor's murder will be the capstone. But what does this have to do with me?
Everything doesn't have to be about you, you know.
Not everything, Waxillium agreed. Just this.
Annoyingly, he was probably right. Why else would Bleeder be parading around the city wearing the body of the man who had killed Waxillium's wife? Waxillium left the corpse, pushing out of the building through the rear exit. There, a narrow alleyway led out to the street. Maracy followed, joining Waxillium in the darkness and mists.
"What are you doing?" she asked.
"You don't plan a dramatic murder like this one without preparing an escape route," Waxillium said. "From the discarded handkerchiefs and handbags left behind, I'd guess the room was full when she revealed the body. The worshippers ran out the main doors, and the murderer would have expected this. She would have come out the back, getting away while everyone was either fleeing or stunned."
"Okay."
"Narrow alley," Waxillium said, kneeling to inspect the wall. "Look at this." Maracy squinted. The bricks along the wall here had been scraped, leaving behind something that had rubbed off on them.
"Looks metallic. Silvery."
"Paint, I'd guess," Waxillium said. "Where it came from is a small question, unfortunately, compared to the larger ones. Why would she kill this priest in the first place? She warned me she was going to. I thought she meant your father, not Father Bin."
"Waxillium," Maracy said, "we need more information about what this creature can do and what its motives might be."
"Agreed," Waxillium said. He rose and stared down the alleyway. "I'd like to ask God a few hard questions. I doubt he's going to make himself available, however, so we'll have to settle for someone else."
"Who?"
Maracy asked.
"I had some help tonight," Waxillium said, "from an unexpected source. I have a feeling that an interview with her will be illuminating. Want to come?"
"Of course I do," Maracy said. "Why wouldn't I?"
"Well," Waxillium said, "I'm worried that interacting with her might prove theologically difficult."
13. Wayne didn't consider himself to be a particularly religious man. He figured that Harmony didn't pay much attention to fellows like him, for the same reason a master painter didn't often wonder what his mom had done with the pictures he'd given her as a toddler. That said, Wayne did like to visit the Temple of the Common Man now and then. It made him feel better and forget his problems for a spell. So he knew the place when Wax sent him on ahead to check it over. The temple huddled on the corner of an intersection, a stately old building, squat and stubborn. Newer tenements perched on either side, some 6 stories tall. But the temple had an air of an old gaffer in his chair who hadn't the inclination to look higher than a fellow's knees. As Wayne had expected, the door was open and friendly, still spilling out light, though it was starting to get late. He strolled down the lane and nodded to the temple guard, who wore a cap and overalls for his uniform, and bore a ceremonial stick, what seemed to have bits of hair sticking out of the end, likely from clubbing men upside the head for being too rowdy. Wayne tipped his hat to the man and chanted the proper invocation to gain admittance.
"Hello, Blue. How water is the beer today?"
"Don't make trouble at the pub tonight, Wayne," the man intoned in response. "My temper is really short."
"Temper," Wayne said, passing him. "That's a funny name for it, mate. But if the ladies like giving you silly names to your body parts, I ain't gonna say nothing."
Ritual introductions finished, Wayne stepped into the temple proper. Inside, men and women bowed at their places, heads drooping as they considered the deep complexities of the Cosmere. Their prayers were made in mumbled exchanges to friends, and their incense in the burning of pipes. A picture of old Ladrian himself hung over the altar, a man with a ripe paunch and a cup thrust forward, as if to demand attention. Wayne stood in the doorway, head bowed in respect, and dabbed his fingers into a trail of beer dripping from a nearby table, then anointed himself on the forehead and navel, the mark of the spear. The scent marked him as a pilgrim upon this holy ground, and he passed among the penitent, seeking forgiveness on his way to the altar. The air of the place was odd tonight, solemn. Yes, the temple was a place of contemplation, but it should also be a place of joy. Where were the hymns, sung in a holy slur? Where was the laughter, the joyful noise of celebration? Not good, he thought as he settled onto one of the pews, in this case a rough circular table, with scriptures carved into it, like, Mick is a total git, and the sausages is rubbish. He'd always liked that one. It brought up real theological implications, it did. If the food they ate was trash, were they ultimately trash? Were they all nothing in the end? Or should one instead see even trash as something to be elevated, as it had been created by the God beyond, like everything else? Wayne settled back in his seat and drew a few looks from nearby tables. As a lovely young conventicalist in a plunging top passed by carrying mugs, he took her arm.
I'll have, he blinked, I'll have some whiskey.
He had the accent and tone of a man who had been very, very pious already this night. The maid shook her head and continued on her way. Those nearby ignored him. Wayne closed his eyes and listened to their prayers.
They're just going to let us starve. You heard the governor, Wren. All he cares about is his rusting reputation. We're supposed to have the good life. Harmony made this land for us all. But do we get to enjoy it? No. Its riches only mean that the fine folk get more outfits and big houses. Something needs to change in this city. I ain't out of work like those fellows at the steel mill, but Harmony. 16-hour shifts. I leave before my little girl gets up, and she's in bed before I get back. See her once a week, I do. We work and die so we can give it all up to the same people. They own the building we live in. Ain't that the scam? Work for them all day, then give it all back at night for the privilege of being able to survive another day to keep working.
Weighty prayers, these were. Wayne kicked back away from his table and walked to the altar at the front of the room, with its bottles on the rack behind shining in the light. Gas lights. Real traditional, this temple was. He settled down at the altar between a fellow with suspenders and another with arms so hairy he had to have some bear in him. Grandfather, at least.
Whiskey, Wayne said to the priest behind the altar.
The man gave him a cup of water with a lemon in it instead. Rusts. Might have laid the accent on a little too thick. Wayne settled back, sipping his water. The men here at the altar, they didn't complain. They just stared, holding their cups. Wayne nodded. Those were silent prayers, the kind that you could read in their eyes. He reached out and plucked the cup from the next man's hands and gave it a sniff. Plain rum. What fun was that? He reached over to Bear Fur and plucked his drink from his fingers as well and gave it a sniff. Both men turned toward him as he downed the rest of his water, then mixed their drinks together in his cup. He gave it a squeeze of his lemon and a pinch of sugar from behind the altar, then added some ice, placed a coaster on top, and shook like his life depended on it. Which it might, since the fellow with rugs on his arms had just stood up and cracked his knuckles. Before he could start pounding, Wayne spun a cup toward each man and settled back in thought. The cups settled into place, and the altar fell silent. Hesitant, the men reached out and tried their drinks. Suspenders tried first.
"Wow," the man said. "What did you do?"
Wayne didn't reply, tapping the table with one finger as Harry Arms tried his drink and nodded appreciatively. Living among the fancy folk had taught Wayne a few things. Fancy folk couldn't ever do anything the ordinary way. Sometimes he thought they acted strange just so they wouldn't be like regular folk. But they did know how to get drunk. He'd give them that. The priest came over to investigate the disturbance, but both men just wanted more of what Wayne had made. The priest listened to them try to explain it and then nodded. Looked like he'd worked some fancy parties or had some rich folk come in. Wayne slipped something onto the altar, a couple of bullet casings.
"What's this?"
the priest asked, setting down the cup he'd been wiping.
Is this aluminum?"
Wayne stood up and gathered a few things from behind the altar, then piled them in the priest's arms. He had ice, fortunately, from a delivery earlier. That was getting cheaper and cheaper these days, with shipments down from the mountains. The fellow also had a nice collection of spirits and some fixings. Enough for Wayne to make do. Wayne pointed for the man to follow him, then began working his way through the room. He stopped at each table, taking their drinks and reworking them. Those with beer got juice or soda water, mixed carefully and transformed. He always left them with something like what they'd started with, but new, fresh. He added ginger to some, worked real nice with lemon, and bitters to others. He tried to use something from every table and only got cussed at a couple of times. Before too long, he had the temple feeling far more companionable. In fact, he'd drawn something of a crowd. The group cheered as he settled down at a table in front of a tall, pretty woman with large eyes and long fingers. The drink he made for her wasn't actually anything special, gin and lime, with some soda water and a hint of sugar, but the secret ingredient, well, that was something special. A pouch of blue powder he'd found at the party earlier that night. He'd traded some sand for it. He mixed the powder into the drink with a hidden twist of the fingers, shaking, before finally adding the lime. As he slid the cup in front of the woman, the drink's blue liquid swirled and moved, then blushed to a deep violet, the color moving through it like growing mists. Those around him hushed in awe, and the woman smiled at him. He gave her a grin back. He was taken, yes, but he needed to keep practicing his flirting, or Renette was likely to start ignoring him. And then the skin of the woman's cheeks shifted to blue, then violet, just like the drink had. Wayne jumped back from the table as her skin returned to normal. She took the drink with a sly smile and sipped at it.
"Nice," she said, "but I usually like something with more kick to it."
The others in the temple were retreating to their pews. They'd enjoyed the show, but were looking forward to enjoying their liquor even more. They didn't seem to have noticed what the woman's skin had done. Perhaps Wayne had been mistaken. He hesitantly took the seat back and looked at the woman, whose eyes, clear as daylight, shifted from blue to violet, then once again to blue.
"Well, hang me," Wayne said. "You're that immortal, ain't you?"
"Sure am," she said, sipping her drink and holding out her hand for him to shake. "Name's Milan. Waxillium told me to say all yellow pants to prove it. You did well here tonight. When I first arrived, I felt like the place was going to burst from all the anger. You might have stopped a riot."
"It's just one pub," Wayne said, shaking her hand, then settling back in his chair. "One out of hundreds. If a riot is brewing, I can't stop it with some girly drinks."
"True, I suppose."
"What I need to do," Wayne said, "is get the whole city drunk."
"Or, you know, advocate workers' rights to bring down working hours, improve conditions, and meet a base minimum of pay."
"Yeah, yeah," Wayne said. "That too. But if I could get everybody drunk, think how much happier this city would be."
"So long as you get me drunk first, I'd be fine with it."
She held out her cup to him.
"Top a lady off, will you?"
Wayne frowned.
"Now this ain't right. You're some kind of demigod or something. Shouldn't you be moralizing at me?"
"Lo, behold,"
Milan said, wiggling her cup.
"Bring an offering to your deity in the form of one blue sunset, extra gin, and ye shall be blessed."
"I think I can do that,"
Wayne said.
Bloody hell. Maybe I am religious after all.
The immortal demigod took a throaty slurp of her beer, then slammed the mug down onto the table, grinning like a 4-year-old who had been paid in cookies to rat out her sister. Wax studied her as she looked Wayne in the eyes and let out a belch that could have woken the dead. Beside Wax, Wayne nodded in appreciation, looking quite impressed. He then downed his own beer and belched back at Milan, easily twice as long and loud.
"How do you do that?" Milan asked.
"Years of training and practice," Wayne said.
"I've been alive for well over half a millennium," Milan said. "I am certain I have more practice than you."
"You don't have the will, though," Wayne said, wagging his finger. "You gotta want it."
He downed the rest of his mug and let out a protracted belch. Marcy, who sat next to Wax in their booth at the pub, looked horrified by the exchange. Wax had allowed her to drive them here, if only so he could rebind his wound and check it over. The painkillers were doing their job, though. He could barely feel the hit. After the short ride, he and Marcy had walked in on these two in the middle of their belching contest? Wax wasn't certain if it was a contest, or more a matter of mutual appreciation, like two virtuosos playing their favorite songs. Milan finished her beer, then dramatically held up her hand. The palm split, forming lips which then let out a soft belch.
"Cheating," Wayne said.
"Just using what Father gave me," Milan said. "Don't tell me you wouldn't belch out of other body parts if you could."
"Well," Wayne said, "now that you mention it, I can make a real interesting sound with..."
Wax cleared his throat.
"Not to defer a conversation about which parts of Wayne's body can and can't make sound, but I have to admit that you aren't what I expected, Your Grace." "Bloody hell," Milan said. "Please don't call me that."
"You're a servant of Harmony," Wax said.
"I'm from one of the later generations," Milan said. "In Chondra terms, I'm basically still a kid."
"You lived through the Catasandra," Wax said. "You knew the originators."
"I spent the Catasandra underground," Milan said. "I was an adolescent and didn't know the land when it was covered in ash. You really don't need to be intimidated by me."
"You're over 600 years old," Marcy said.
"So is dirt," Milan said.
She leaned forward.
"Look, I'm just here to help. If you want someone to fawn over, I'll send Vendel or one of the really ancient ones to you. They like it. I just want to see Pa Alm stopped, then helped."
Wax leaned forward on the table. He could sense in the way Milan smiled at people passing by, the way she tapped her finger to the tavern song a group of drunk men sang in the corner, that she liked people. She liked being here among them. She wasn't aloof, as he'd expected, or withdrawn. Not even that alien, despite the fact that she'd just made a mouth in her hand.
"You're the one who brought me my earring," he said, fingering his ear with its tiny spike. "All those years ago."
Milan's smile widened.
"I was wearing the same body, but I'm still surprised you remember."
"And whose body is it?" Marcy asked. "Where did you get those bones?"
"I made them,"
Milan said, raising her chin. Her face went transparent, suddenly revealing the skull underneath, one made of carved crystal of a vivid emerald color.
"I prefer true bodies, though if I need to, I can take another form. I'll warn you, as far as Chondra go, I'm only so-so at impersonation."
"And this one we're hunting?" Wayne asked.
He'd started building a house-like tower using the thin wooden coasters strewn around the tavern table, balancing them on their ends.
"Pa Alm,"
Milan said, turning her face back to normal.
"She was one of our best. Of all the Chondra I know, only Tensun is better at it than she is."
"But she'll be erratic," Wax said. "She's gone mad. That should help us spot her even in disguise, right?"
"Maybe,"
Milan said, grimacing. She took a few of the coasters and started her own tower.
"Pa'am is good, and imitation... well, It's kind of